The Ukraine situation this weekend is, to put it plainly, a mess of signals pointing in every direction at once. Let's start with the diplomatic track. Witkoff and Kushner were supposed to make their first trip to Kyiv this weekend, visiting Moscow on Saturday and Kyiv on Sunday, September 5th and 6th. But a source is now saying Witkoff started to get scared. And honestly, given what happened overnight, that fear is not irrational. 548 Ukrainian drones targeted the Moscow region in one of the largest attacks in roughly 2 years. If you're flying into either capital this weekend, you are flying into a very live conflict.
The drone attack context matters here. Ukraine has been systematically escalating its long-range strike capability, and 548 drones in a single night is a deliberate signal, both to Russia and to the Trump envoys. Kyiv is essentially demonstrating that it still has leverage, that it hasn't been negotiated into a corner. From a strategic standpoint, this is Zelensky's government saying, any peace framework has to account for what we can still do militarily.
Meanwhile, Putin is giving what I'd call a diplomatic fog signal. He said a peace deal is possible, but insisted that Kyiv and Moscow must negotiate directly, which sounds reasonable on the surface but is actually a way of sidelining US mediation. If Ukraine negotiates directly with Russia without American backing, Russia believes it has structural leverage. Putin knows that.
And then there's the Norway-Russia maritime standoff that's directly connected to the broader Ukraine economic war. Norway impounded a Russian cruise vessel in Svalbard, the Arctic archipelago, where Russia has longstanding mining rights, specifically to enforce Ukraine's $4.22 billion arbitration award over Crimea energy assets. Putin is calling it state terrorism. That's not diplomatic language. That's language designed to justify escalation. Russia seizing energy infrastructure in 2014, losing an arbitration ruling, and now watching Norway physically seize one of its ships to collect. That's a significant legal enforcement moment.
The economic ripple from the peace signals is already visible in commodity markets. Wheat prices dropped noticeably after Putin's comments, because global wheat markets have been running a war premium ever since the 2022 invasion disrupted Black Sea shipping lanes. A genuine peace deal would mean Ukrainian and Russian grain flowing more freely, which is good for food prices globally. But it tells you how much of current commodity pricing is geopolitical risk rather than underlying supply and demand.
And Trump is simultaneously demanding that Europe repay the US for military aid already sent to Ukraine. The timing of that demand, right as Witkoff and Kushner are supposed to be brokering peace, is revealing. It suggests the administration sees the Ukraine file as both a diplomatic negotiation and a debt collection exercise, and those two things are very hard to do simultaneously. You don't usually ask your negotiating partner's allies to pay you back while you're trying to get those same allies to support the deal.
There's also the Danish intelligence warning that Russia is planning sabotage operations against Denmark's defense industry. And Lavrov's call for NATO to disband, while NATO Secretary General Rutte warns of Russian recklessness, these are not the atmospherics of a peace deal taking shape. These are the atmospherics of a conflict where one side is probing every dimension simultaneously. Military, economic, and covert.
One more thread that doesn't get enough attention. A Russian general who was charged by international prosecutors with overseeing the missile strike on a Kyiv hospital was shot in what appears to be an assassination attempt inside Russia. That's a remarkable data point. It suggests that accountability mechanisms for war crimes, even when pursued through international legal channels, are generating real-world consequences inside Russia itself.